Well, greetings again, friends and brethren. I hope this finds everyone doing well. Well, here we are now in the month of December, in the first week of December, and this is December 7th, actually, Pearl Harbor Day when I'm recording this. This will just be a short message today entitled, "Tis the Season." And it is that season of year when the world around us has commenced its onslaught of preparations for the celebration of the pagan day Christmas. And so true Christians have to tolerate and put up with this every year, year in and year out, and just like we do with birthdays and other pagan celebrations. But so what I wanted to do in this just very short message is just to review some questions and answers that were written into the church years ago, and these were posted in, I believe it was a Good News magazine, and but there were questions that were asked by members and other and even other people, not in the church, but mainly members, on how to deal with the Christmas season. So I'll just go through these. It's probably six or eight questions, and ask the questions and show what the answer was from the church at that time, from the letter answering department in the Worldwide Church of God. This is way back in the 70s and 80s now when this was done. So this is a review for all of us, but also to help some of the newer people that are newly baptized and the ones that are looking forward to baptism, and because these questions do come up periodically about how to deal with situations this time of year. And so I'll begin reading with this, and we'll just see if we can cover some of these questions and answers here during this short message, just as a reminder and also as to help some of the newly baptized and the ones that soon will be baptized. And then first, I would like to advise all of us or anyone, to go back and review that book Mr. Armstrong wrote on the plain truth about Christmas, and read it over it, read it in detail and study it, because it does, it's part of that foundation of truth. But the first question here that is, should a Christian observe Christmas, and how did Christmas originate? So these are brief questions and brief answers, so they won't take very long to go through these. It says the answer to this one was, many readers have asked us whether Jesus Christ was really born on December 25th. Did Paul, the other apostles in the early New Testament church celebrate Christmas? What is the origin of the Christmas tree, of Santa Claus, and of the mistletoe and the holly wreath? Most people in the Western world have grown up practicing Christmas customs and assuming these customs are Christian. See, they assume it. But never questioning why. See, they never question why. It is time we learn the facts. The holiday now called Christmas is rooted in pagan antiquity. Christmas was celebrated by the ancient Egyptians, Babylonians, and Assyrians 2,000 years before Christ was born. Yet Christmas was not celebrated in Jerusalem, where Christ founded the inspired New Testament church, until A.D. 385, more than three centuries after God's true church fled from the city. Why? Did you know that the pagan Romans, long before the birth of Christ, called December 25th, the Brumalia, or birthday of the new sun, after the winter solstice? Christmas was originally celebrated in honor of the pagan false Messiah. It was idolatry. You can find every one of these facts in any good encyclopedia or reference book in your public library. Though the Bible never tells us to observe Christmas and never records any such observance by the apostles or the early true church, it does condemn the adoption of pagan practices and dressing up paganism in Christmas clothes. Thus says the Eternal, learn not the way of the heathen, for the customs of their people are vain. That's Jeremiah 10, verse 2 through 3. God warns his people not to borrow and use pagan customs or festivals to worship him. He says, take heed to yourself that you are not ensnared to follow them, that's the heathen, and that you do not inquire after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods? I will also do likewise. Lesson Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 30. If the eternal God had wanted us to keep Christmas, he would have clearly shown us so. But he warned his people not to worship him by means of pagan customs and pagan feasts. You shall not worship the eternal your God in that way, verse 31. Okay, that's the answer to that question. And the next question is, all right, so Christmas is based on pagan traditions and myth. What is wrong with borrowing some of those customs and using them to honor Jesus on his birthday? And here's the answer. To begin with, the Bible nowhere says Jesus was born on December 25th. In fact, it doesn't tell us which day Jesus was born. It doesn't even tell us the month. The Bible does, however, show that Jesus' birth did not take place in December, or for that matter, any of the winter months. It is clear from Luke 2, verse 8, when Jesus was born, there were in the same country, the scripture says, there were in the same country shepherds living out in the fields, keeping watch over their flock by night, unquote. The shepherds were living out in the open fields, sleeping with their flocks at night. As many Bible commentators admit, the shepherds would not have been doing this during the cold and rainy winter months. It was hardly the kind of weather for sleeping out in the fields or for having a baby in a stable and laying him in a manger, Luke 2, verse 7. So we know when Jesus was not born. If we are supposed to celebrate his birthday, why doesn't the Bible give us the date of that event? Elsewhere in the scriptures, when God revealed certain days he wanted his people to observe, no room was left for doubt as to when those days occurred. Information on determining the exact days for celebration was abundantly clear and precise. The 14th day of the first month, or count 50 days to the day, or in the seventh month, or on the first day of the month, see, etc. See Leviticus 23, the entire chapter. The instructions were specific because God wanted his people to observe those particular days. Why, then, the silence as to which day Christ was born? The plain truth is that the Bible nowhere commands us to observe birthdays in the first place. The Bible does reveal two examples of specific birthday celebrations. Pharaoh of Egypt, that's in Genesis chapter 40, verses 20 through 22, and Herod of Galilee, that's Matthew 14, verses 6 through 12. On both of those occasions, part of the festivities involved beheading. The latter beheading was of John the Baptist, see, of Herod's birthday party. So, an even more important point to consider is this. When Jesus' name is applied to borrowed pagan ideas and practices, does Jesus really feel honored? After all, it was Jesus himself who told his people, Israel, not to seek or to worship him with customs borrowed from other religions. That's in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 29 through 32. Time and again, he made it clear through his prophets that he wanted his people to remain cleansed of everything pagan. That's in Nehemiah 13, verse 30. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. See, that's in Hebrews 13, verse 8. And I might add also Malachi 3, God of the Old Testament is Christ. He says, I am the eternal, I change not. Okay, for the next question now. The next question is it true that many American colonists refused to keep Christmas and New Year's Day because both were derived from paganism? It's interesting. Now, here's the answer. Not only did most American colonists reject the pagan custom of observing Christmas and New Year's, but so did the King of England. During the 16th century, Henry VIII of England abolished the observance of Christmas with his attendant with its attendant revelry. In 1542, the licentious customs of paganism were still firmly welded to December 25th. After criticism over the disorders during the Christmas season, Henry prescribed the festival for 12 years. It was restored in 1554 after Mary, Queen of Scots, a zealous Roman Catholic, took control. In his book, Survivals of Roman Religion, Gordon Lang reports, apparently the compromise made by the early church in adapting the customs of Saturnalia, the Roman solar festival, to Christian practice had little or no effect in checking the license of the festival. This continued through the whole Christmas season and sometimes lasted till the day of Epiphany, that's January 6, page 65, that's of his book. To escape religious oppression and persecution, many people were forced to escape England and settle in the New World. Francis X, Wiser comments, quote, in the colonies of New England, however, the unfortunate and misdirected zeal of the Puritans against Christmas persisted far into the 19th century, unquote. That's from the Handbook of Christian Feasts and Customs, page 65. Then, how did Christmas become the biggest and most expensive holiday in the world? Weiser puts his finger on the source of Christmas customs in the New World. He says it was not until immigrants from Ireland and from continental Europe arrived in large numbers towards the middle of the last century that Christmas in America began to flourish. The Germans brought the Christmas tree, page 67. The Roman Catholics of Southern Ireland and German Protestants and Catholics finally overbalanced objections to Christmas and New Year's observance by the Puritans and others. Today, many professing Christians openly acknowledge the pagan origin of these seasonal festivals, but most people think it doesn't make any difference where Christmas or New Year came from. Don't you make that tragic mistake. God long ago warned his true people not to appropriate pagan customs to use in worshiping him. Do not inquire after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? I will do likewise. You shall not worship the Lord your God in that way. Again, that's Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 30 and 31. Of man's false festivals such as Christmas, God thunders, your appointed feasts my soul hates. They are trouble to me. I am weary of bearing them. That's Isaiah chapter 1, verse 14. That's true of the world's customs, but also what has happened to many of God's own people today in his church. The next question is, should a Christian observe Christmas, and how did Christmas originate? See, some of these are almost repetitive, but these were questions that were written over the years, so they were answered in the Good News and other magazines. So some of the answers may have some variations, but they all come to the same point, so it's good to review these. So should a Christian observe Christmas, and how did it originate? Here's the answer. It's a short answer. Many readers have asked us whether Jesus Christ was really born on December 25th. Did Paul, the other apostles in the early New Testament church celebrate Christmas? What is the origin of the Christmas tree, of Santa Claus, the mistletoe, and the holly wreath? Most people in the Western world have grown up practicing Christmas customs and assuming these customs are Christian, but never questioning why. Well, this actually is the same answer as I was given before. I think maybe I've repeated that. So let's go to the next question. Actually, I was actually going back and reading that first question over. I apologize. The next one down. I'm sorry about that. I'm almost going blind here, so you have to bear with me. Okay, here's the next question. It says, I've heard you say on your television program that Christmas observance does not come from the Bible. Where does it come from then? excuse me. Here's the answer. Where Christmas customs came from is really no secret. You can read the origins of Christmas customs in encyclopedias and other reference works. The Encyclopedia Britannica, for example, draws the reader's attention to these facts. First, Christmas customs are an evolution from times that long antedate the Christian period, a descent from seasonal pagan religious and national practices, hedged about with legend and tradition. That's the 15th edition of the Britannica on Christmas. Continuing, it's a fact that at the end of December and beginning of January, festive celebrations were taking place in various nations of Europe centuries before Christ was born. When that festive season rolled around, little children were filled with anticipation and excitement. The whole family got busily involved in putting up decorations. Bows of holly and evergreen were assembled and placed about the house. The mistletoe was hung, a tree was chosen and decorated with ornaments. It was a season of giving and receiving presents, a time to sing songs, admire all the pretty lights, and burn the Yule log. There were parades with special floats, sumptuous meals, and merrymaking. And all this, and Jesus wasn't even born yet. See, in ancient times, many of the earth's inhabitants, realizing their dependence upon the sun for light, heat, and the growing of crops, watched the sun's yearly course in the heavens with deep interest. At different seasons, feasts and celebrations were held to help, as it was thought, the solar orb on its way. The end of December was an especially significant time in the northern hemisphere. The days were short. The sun was at its lowest point. Special festivals of thanksgiving and encouragement to the sun were held, S-S-U-N, the sun, were held, when at the winter solstice the day began to lengthen. There was great celebration lasting into the first part of January. The sun, the S-U-N, the sun, light of the world, had been reborn. Such festivities, once meant to honor the sun and its god, were freely adopted by the spreading and increasingly popular Christian religion. Why not? In the same way, honor Jesus, the real light of the world, even though he was not actually born in December. The modern Christmas tree is supposed to have originated in German lands in the Middle Ages. Since evergreens were green throughout the dead of winter, people looked upon them as especially imbued with life. It was in honor of the tree spirit, or the spirit of growth and fertility, that greenery was a prominent part of ancient pagan winter celebrations. The Romans trimmed trees with trinkets and toys at that time of year. The Druids tied gilded apples to tree branches. To certain peoples, an evergreen decorated with orbs and other fruit-like objects symbolized the tree of life in the Garden of Eden. Branches of holly and mistletoe, likewise were revered. Not only do these plants remain green throughout the winter months, but they actually bear fruit at that time. Once again, a type of the spirits of fertility. Still today, catching someone under a branch of a mistletoe can serve as a convenient springboard for romantic activity. Few people stop to wonder what in the world such strange customs had to do with the birth of Jesus. The ancients lit festive fires in the last part of December to encourage the waning sun god, just as Christmas bonfires, candles, and other lights burn today at the same time of year. The use of the Yule log, part of the Yule tide season, harkens back to the ritual burning of a carefully chosen log by the Druids. The word Yule comes from an old Anglo-Saxon word, H-W-E-O-L, wheel, meaning wheel, W-H-E-E-L, so it means wheel, a round wheel being an appropriate symbol for the sun. You thought Christmas shopping spree was a 20th century phenomenon, huh? Listen to how the 4th century writer Libanius described the end of the year gift-giving and partying in the ancient non-Christian Roman Empire. Everywhere, he says, everywhere may be seen well-laden tables. The impulse to spend seizes everyone. He who through the whole year has taken pleasure in saving becomes suddenly extravagant. A stream of presents pours itself out on all sides, as quoted in the Christmas ritual and tradition. Of all times in the year, it was a parenthetical statement there. Let me read that again. A stream of presents pours itself out on all sides. Then in parentheses, as an example, it shows as quoted in Christmas ritual and tradition. Close parentheses. Of all times of the year, it was indeed the season to be jolly. Drunkenness was widespread. Fortunately, however, the modes of transportation in those days did not lend themselves to the high rate of drunken driver-induced traffic fatalities that are a part of the Christmas season in many nations today. An important part of the pagan harvest festivities, beginning in October and November with what has become Halloween, involved good and bad spirits. In many lands, visitors, usually bringers of good or evil, made their appearance in the winter season. Through blending pagan legends with traditions about saints, certain figures emerged with similar personalities. We recognize them today in different nations as Santa Claus, Father Christmas, Saint Nicholas, Saint Martin, the Weihnachtsmann, Peer Noel. Whatever name is used, all these winter visitors fulfill a similar role. These fictional persons, Christianizations of the pagan Germanic deities, clearly perpetuate certain folk ritual themes wherein varying degrees of rewards and punishments were dealt out to the celebrants. Through the centuries, these customs came to be centered around children. See, that's why there's so much emphasis on the children today. Well, it's all about the children. Well, there it is, but it doesn't make it right, see, and that, because it was about the children then. And it also, if you go back and read, I think it's in A Plain Truth About Christmas or some other writings of Mr. Armstrong, it really can be tied back to the time of Nimrod, and when he was... they were actually sacrificing children during that time. And that's really how the tradition of the Yule log, that's the history of the Yule log, even before it came along. Burning that Yule log actually is a symbol of what used to be human sacrifices in the form of children. And that goes back thousands and thousands of years. Anyway, let me continue reading. It is not too hard to see a connection between Santa using the chimney or the shoes and stockings hung by the fireplace, and the ancient superstitions about hearth spirits. For thousands of years, especially among the Chinese, it was customary to sweep and scour the house in preparation for the visit of the hearth spirit. Each year, dressed in a pointed fiery red cap and red jacket, this fire god traveled from the distant heavens to visit homes and distribute favors or punishments. Today, he is welcome in the Western world each Christmas season. Popular Christmas customs, as we can see, plainly reflect non-Christian legends and practices. Some of the very Christmas customs observed today were once banned by the Catholic Council of Rome, the English Parliament, and the Puritans of New England. The logical question to ask is, what is there that is Christian about Christmas? That's the answer to that question. So the next question is, how do I tell my friends and relatives that I no longer wish to exchange presents? How do I tell my friends and relatives that I no longer wish to exchange presents? And the answer is, with a smile. That's right. Show firmness, yet at the same time be relaxed and friendly about it. One of the biggest mistakes you can make is to come across as a religious fanatic fired up with purple-veined emotion on the subject. There's no need to make friends and relatives feel condemned and guilty about what you say. Your example will be testimony enough to them. Most of them haven't the faintest idea where Christmas customs came from or why they are following them. It's more superstition than it is religion. They're just doing what everyone around them does. If you haven't read our reprint article, should you try to convert others, you should request a copy. And I think I do have a copy of that somewhere if anyone wants it. Many of the problems arising from the Christmas season can be resolved if you apply three principles. Number one, stress your objection to the commercialism of the season. See, stress your objection to the commercialism or the commercialization of the season. See, many people do that today. Immediately, you have everyone, with the possible exception of some shopkeepers and commercial interest, on your side. See, who can deny that Christmas is a crassly commercial holiday, that it is budget-bustingly expensive? Who would not, especially as general economic conditions worsen, and see they still are worsening, who would not, with this situation of the economy getting worse, rather spend the money on more needful items, like maybe heating the house, or food, or paying bills? Who does not dread the wearisome Christmas shopping experience, the time-consuming uncertainty as to what to buy for whom? All you have to say is you've had enough of it, and that when you give a gift, you want to do it spontaneously instead of a slave to some custom. After the initial shock wears off, most people will respect your stand and secretly wish they had the courage to do likewise. Some, in fact, heartened by your example, may do just that. Okay, number two is maintain a sense of humor. See, it's important. Maintain a sense of humor. Let's face it. Cutting trees down and then setting them back up loaded with ornaments, the whole gift trading rigmarole, the thought of an overweight bearded individual decked out in flamboyant red and traveling through the air on a sled or some other conveyance when he is not slithering up and down someone's chimney, these and so many other traditions are ridiculous. Feel free to point that out. Who can deny it? Number three, put the burden of proof on those who are celebrating Christmas. See, put the burden of proof on those who are actually celebrating Christmas. It's not that there isn't overwhelming proof to back you up in your decision to cease celebrating Christmas. See, there is. There certainly is. We got a lot of proof. But most people have neither the time nor the interest for a detailed explanation. So shift the burden of proof to them. That's right. I'll break from reading. That's right. So all you've got to do is prove to me. See, prove to me why I should keep it. So continue reading. It says, say, in effect, if you can show me where the Bible says I ought to observe Christmas, or where it says early Christians celebrated Jesus' birthday, I will celebrate it also. See, that's a good example. See, put the burden of proof on them. The discussion will probably end very suddenly at that point. Of course, if the person to whom you are speaking shows an obvious interest in learning about the real origin of Christmas, you should be prepared to give an appropriate answer. Very good. And that's the answer to that question. How do I tell my friends and relatives I no longer wish to exchange presents? Okay, the next question is, Some relatives have invited me to their house for dinner on Christmas Day. Should I refuse the invitation? Good question. The answer is not necessarily. It depends on the nature of the occasion. Since you understand the truth about Christmas, to you, the day will just be another day, ordinary day of the year. And to you, the simple fact of eating a meal with others on that day is no different from eating one with them on any other day. What matters in this case, though, is how your relatives will regard the occasion. If they look on the meal as part of a Christmas festivities and place religious significance upon it, then you would be out of place there. Your attendance could give the impression that you are observing Christmas with them, or if they know about your beliefs, that you are willing to compromise on your beliefs. On the other hand, if the meal is merely a convenient opportunity for a family get-together, excuse me, and there is no objectional connotation placed upon the meal, then it might be all right to accept the invitation. Better be prepared to answer some questions, though, because sooner or later, the conversation is sure to focus on why you don't observe Christmas. End of that answer. Next question is, my friends and relatives continue to send me Christmas cards. Should I write back to each one of them and explain that I have quit celebrating Christmas? What happens if someone gives me a gift anyway? Should I return it? Here's the answer. That depends. If a person is testing you to see how deeply your religious convictions lie, returning the gift is a proper response. See? On the other hand, in cases where the person sincerely doesn't know or comprehend your stand, a polite note of thanks for the gift and a brief statement that you no longer observe the Christmas holiday may be sufficient. By the way, you will find that most people will stop giving you Christmas gifts after a year or two of not receiving one in turn. That's the end of that answer. Isn't that true? Because that's what it's all about, getting. See, they think it's give, but it's really get. That's what the attitude is. Well, I didn't get a gift for so-and-so, so I'm not going to give them one. So see how the competition gets in there? It's not the true spirit of giving. Let me see. Next question. What should I say when someone wishes me Merry Christmas? It is often sufficient to respond with a question such as, where has this year gone? Or, is it that time of year again? Wow. Or do you think it's going to snow? Or even a parting statement on an entirely unrelated subject such as, goodbye now or have a good day. The surprising fact is that few individuals will even notice that you haven't wished Merry Christmas in return. That's how meaningless the expression is. At other times, a smile and a thank you, meaning that you are grateful for their concern, may be more appropriate. So there you go. You don't have to say Merry Christmas. You can either keep quiet or just say have a nice day. That's what I've done for many years. Okay, next question. What do I tell my children now that they will no longer be receiving presents at Christmas? What do I tell my children now that they will be no longer receiving presents at Christmas? The answer, why not tell them the truth? Why not tell them that you have come to understand that the world is wrong in its observance of Christmas and that you are going to do God's will because it is better than Christmas? See, good point. Be sure to emphasize the positive side, that God's way is better than Christmas. As proof of this, tell your children you're going to give gifts to them throughout the year because you love them all year long, not just on Christmas Day. That, in turn, is precisely what they can tell their friends who will be showing off their Christmas gifts. It is important not to leave a void in your children's lives by removing Christmas observance and putting nothing in its place. Arrange special activities with them often, and especially centering around the holy days that God has ordained in the Scriptures, the days He does want us to observe. Okay, that's the answer to that one. Now the next question is there anything I can do to prevent my child from having to participate in Christmas activities at school? Is there anything I can do to prevent my child from having to participate in Christmas activities at school? The answer, one of the most important steps you as a Christian parent can take is to discuss the subject with the children's teachers. Addressing the problem ahead of time politely inform the teachers involved that you do not observe certain day holidays and that you do not want to have your children take part in the celebrations centering around those days. Seek to avoid as much as possible leaving a teacher in a difficult situation with children to teach but not knowing what to have them do while others, for example, are drawing Santa Claus. You can advise that your children may draw winter scenes or snowmen instead of things immediately associated with Christmas. If the whole class is having a Christmas party, perhaps you could offer to come to school and take your children home that afternoon to relieve the teacher from having to find something else for them to do. In any case, to be very cooperative with school officials, above all, ask God for wisdom and grace and favor in their sight. That's a good thing to ask always, friends and brethren. Always ask God for wisdom and grace and favor in the sight of those that you're going to be potentially confronting or discussing these things with, or anything regarding the truth. Continuing, your children themselves, especially as they get older, will be a determining factor as to whether they become involved in worldly religious holiday activities at school or elsewhere away from home. You can't be with them every minute. This underlines the absolute need to provide positive instruction at home. See, if children are convinced in their own minds that they should not participate in certain activities, much of the battle is already won. I say amen to that, and that's the answer to that question. And I might add, too, that since this was written many years ago, with the tremendous advance in political correctness in this society, and you see this all the time in the news with what's going on with the Muslim religion, but also other religions that are trying to pretty much do away with Christianity in the school or public prayer, and then giving equal or more rights to other religions. So it's, in one respect, it should be easier today to just let your teachers know what your beliefs are and aren't, or for your children, and they are required by law to respect them, just like they are for Muslims or anyone else. If they don't, they're violating federal law with respect to the Privacy Act and discrimination against religion. Okay, I think we got one more question here. Yeah, the last one. This is the last question. It is a standard policy for the company. It is a standard policy for the company where I work to give all employees a Christmas bonus. Should I accept this bonus? The answer: bonuses given at the end of the year are usually not considered as Christmas gifts. They are often given in gratitude for work done throughout the preceding year. It is logical to wait until the end of the year before giving such a bonus, and Christmas seems to be as good an occasion as any. Most large companies are not interested, one way or the other, in personal convictions of their employees, and when that's the case, there is no reason to refuse the bonus. If you are working for a smaller company where you know your employer personally, it may be advisable to mention to him or her that you don't celebrate Christmas. If he or she wants to give you the bonus regardless, as simply a gift or token of appreciation, you can accept it with a clear conscience. And that's the answer to that question. And that's going to be the conclusion of this message. It's just a review of some common questions that have come up over the years. I know I haven't covered them all, but these were just some that I had that were notated over the years, and I kept track of, and they're a good general common sense questions and answers. And again, you can review that plain truth about Christmas, and I probably, like last year, will be putting up on the front of the website again. And I think I did that last year during Christmas time, put the plain truth about Christmas booklet at the top of the web pages on the left, just for anyone out there who does come across it that may be just searching some fundamental truths, and they can read that and prove it themselves one way or the other. So that will conclude this message. I hope it's been helpful as a reminder for all of us, and also hopefully helpful for the newer members of the body of Christ. So until next time, do take care. I love you all.